Don't turn that dial. It's 96.3 FM. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear, Robert Norse. This is Bathrob Spear's Broadsides, 2.5 hours from 11 to 1:30 on Sunday afternoon. The January 24th, 1999 show. We're going to be following particularly closely the task force on the camping van with lots of analysis, numerous replays of some of their task force meetings, and a look ahead to Monday, when tomorrow there will be a full-scale forum from 6:30 to 9:30 at Loudoun Nelson Center for those who are concerned about restoring human rights to the homeless and those who oppose that. Stay tuned. We also have interviews with Kate Wells, Marusha Obluda from Palo Alto, and more. And first up on Bathrob Spear's Broadsides, let's turn to Palo Alto. Palo Alto is a community, of course, halfway between San Francisco and San Jose, relatively wealthy, hosts Stanford University. A couple of years ago, it was in the news as putting in a sit-lie law, actually a very limited law compared to our own sitting ban and our own lying ban. And for those who don't know, in Santa Cruz, in any downtown or commercial district, and I think it's also in beachfront areas, if you lie on the sidewalk at any time of the day or night, that is an infraction offense, $162 ticket. If you lie there for two periods of time, after having been warned, I think it's within a period of a month, I could be wrong about that, you can get a misdemeanor charge, which is punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. Such cases have been taken to court, although I don't think fines were that stiff. The judges were more lenient. There was a case of a man who was actually sitting, because the same penalties apply to sitting in Santa Cruz. There's still, of course, a sitting ban in Santa Cruz. If you sit 10 feet from a shop or shop window, even if you're not blocking the sidewalk, you are considering to be engaging in sabotage of commerce in Santa Cruz. They don't say that, of course. But for what other reason could there be a fine of $162 for simply sitting down if you're not bothering anyone walking by? Do the merchants own the public sidewalks? We hope they don't, but it seems that the city council has ruled, in effect, they have a very strong influence on what goes on there. So if they like you out there, that's fine. If they don't, then move along, big boy. That's happening in Santa Cruz now. That's part of the downtown ordinances that we keep hoping that our new city council, that great bastion of liberalism, swept into power in November with all our good and hard work, and a lot of hard work here at Free Radio Santa Cruz as well, a lot of support from Bathrob Spear's Broadsides. If those folks will get off the dime and start making some changes, then maybe we can start restoring civil rights, get back to the sort of center of things, and then proceed in a positive way to deal with proposals that affect positively all of our community, that make Santa Cruz the city that it's always wanted to be, instead of the city that big business interests now seem to be deforming it into being. In Palo Alto, as I said before, 2 years ago, they kind of took a a page from one of the black books in Santa Cruz and passed their own sit-lie ban law, which made it illegal to sit or lie along the 10-block area of University Avenue. Apparently, they haven't enforced it much because there was a lot of protest from the liberal community, even though the council isn't too liberal there. And the community, as usual, is more liberal than the city council, as it's been in Santa Cruz for the last several decades. Santa Cruz councils that have called themselves liberal or progressive have been nothing of the kind on homeless issues, and we are still waiting. The verdict is still somewhat open on the current council, which actually explicitly came to power talking about ending the sleeping ban or making it legal for homeless people to sleep at night after organization supported such a change and an initiative to that effect last summer, which fell short of the number of votes, but certainly got the support from thousands and thousands of Santa Cruz city voters, which would lead one to believe that that would be an item not terribly controversial among most people, the right to sleep. And we're going to see and follow that, as I say, not only in the weeks ahead, but in the minutes ahead in the show as we investigate some of the task force meetings of the Santa Cruz City Council. Right now, as I said, Palo Alto is the focus, and Palo Alto having passed apparently a law making it illegal to stand on medians on public property with a sign saying spare change, need work, what you will. Well, I'm going to read you this article before we go any further. I'm somewhat limited because I had another article that I unfortunately have mislaid, but this is the later article. It's kind of the police department's response. They kind of realized that this wasn't playing too well, the idea of criminalizing begging of a very passive, quiet sort. So they've come up with this interesting plan. I'll read it to you. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle, Friday, January 22nd. The headline is, Palo Alto sets up cart swap. Cited homeless to get new wheels from police by Carolyn Zinko. Palo Alto doesn't want people to sit on University Avenue, beg from median strips at Stanford Shopping Center, or buy alcohol if they have been arrested for drinking-related offenses. But its police officers will hand out shopping carts to homeless folks cited for having stolen grocery carts. Police credited city manager June Fleming with the idea after a flap over the ticketing of Lawrence Deal outside a downtown Walgreens in November. In Palo Alto, less than $200 was spent in public safety funds to buy six carts from a local hardware store. Palo Alto Police Chief Pat Dwyer said the new policy is just a matter of enforcing the law, but to some it appears Palo Alto's get-tough approach is softening. I think that's great, trying a different approach and not just the hammer, said Trina Lubberchek, a former member of the City Human Relations Commission, who has been publicly critical of Palo Alto's ban on sitting or lying on University Avenue. Palo Alto passed the ban, which applies to certain portions of the Chic Avenue, which had become popular with panhandlers in 1997, but not that popular, from my experience. Over the last couple of years, the city has done things to make Palo Alto unfriendly or inhospitable to street people. These things have been proposed in the name of safety, but I don't think that's the case, she said. Brett Castle, an assistant manager at Whole Foods grocery store in downtown Palo Alto, said the policy should help prevent the loss of 75 carts a year. At $125 to $150 apiece, it's a huge problem for us, he said. In November, police began a controversial program that put photos of banned drunks in liquor stores to reduce crime and alcohol-related disturbances by giving businesses more confidence in refusing the sale of alcohol to habitual drunkards. I would have to assume those are habitual drunkards who are homeless, not habitual drunkards who are in the suites and homes and more fashionable districts because they can be habitually drunk in comfort. Last week, the City Council agreed to study a ban on panhandling along roadsides and median strips, city safety concerns for pedestrians and motorists. Again, the safety concern issue is a complete blind, a complete excuse, a complete and shallow pretext for simply trying to get rid of people with little signs on these median strips. No carts have been handed out yet. Forgive my editorializing, but you're going to hear more of it, I'm afraid. No carts been handed out yet, but under the new policy described by Dwyer yesterday, any homeless person cited for possession of a stolen grocery store shopping cart will have it confiscated and replaced by a vertical four-wheel cart with metal sides. Police believe that the new policy will send the message that theft will not be tolerated. We don't want to strand someone in the middle of a business district with all their worldly goods with no help, Dwyer said. It's also important we not confuse enforcement of laws with targeting any certain group, and that we have to concentrate more on behavior than on people. In San Francisco, a city task force is working on getting grocery stores to donate old carts to nonprofit groups as a tax write-off. The carts would be handed out to the needy. Of course, this is police gobbledygook, folks. They don't want to strand someone in the middle of the business district with all their worldly goods with no help, probably because they don't want a pile of debris on the streets and the stigma of stealing people's property and compacting it, as is done in, San Francisco under the enlightened whitewash Willie Brown, who's doubled the Matrix program, actually more than doubled the Matrix program of citing people who are outside for survival crimes, such as sleeping. Or Santa Cruz, which, for example, gaily rips, shreds, and discards the tents of homeless people, as it did a week ago down in back of Costco's, not Costco's, the leather area near the river, I guess near the new shopping center at River and Highway 1. We had reports of 7 tents shredded. So the benevolent police department of Palo Alto is saying that they're not going to, they don't want to confuse enforcement of laws with targeting any certain group, even though they state that any homeless person cited for possession of a stolen grocery store shopping cart will have it confiscated and replaced by a vertical four-wheel cart. So in other words, in order to get this cart, you have to be convicted of theft of another cart. And this is supposed to be a benevolent gesture. This is the most, I guess the word preposterous comes to mind, but it's preposterous and ham-handed because it's so obviously a proposal that a homeless person is not going to use. I suppose you could say that every homeless person walking around with a shopping cart, and it, by the way, it must be said, we interviewed some folks around the shopping cart crisis, so to speak, in, I believe it was Fresno, actually, when the question was homeless dumping from San Jose, and they told us that most of the shopping carts were being taken by non-homeless people, you know, residents who kind of wheeled them home and left them there and then brought them back at some time later or failed to bring them back. So again, the homeless, of course, are getting blamed and scapegoated, and they become a convenient target for police, politicians, and similar creatures of ill repute. And that's what's happening in Palo Alto. And to get the direct word from this, we contacted a Palo Alto homeless activist, a man named Purusha Obluda, who is a commentator on radio station KKUP. You can hear him every Wednesday morning, 9 o'clock on 91.5 FM, for those of you who listen to radio station KKUP. Here's an interview with him, and here's what he said about this whole situation. Okay, we're on the air with Purusha Obluda, who has been following the situation in Palo Alto for quite a while. Okay, Purusha, go ahead. I understand that in Palo Alto, things have been getting kind of strange. I read in the San Francisco Chronicle about, well, we'll arrest them for panhandling, but we'll give them shopping carts. I mean, what does all this mean? What's going on?
Well, that's a kind of funny little backlash. The city fathers and mothers, including the head of the city council, Gary Fazzino, and his cohorts, have decided it's time to follow the dictates of the small businesses in Palo Alto, which are all doing extremely well, and push through an ordinance that'll prevent people from standing on median strips or various places where they have been standing occasionally with a little sign hoping to get a small handout when people stop at stoplights and so on.
Now they're claiming that this is a traffic hazard, I understand.
Yes, it's another one of these things where it's a safety hazard that they're being proactive about, to use that most obnoxious of.
Wasn't this a similar pretext used back at 2 years ago when they claimed that there was a trip and fall hazard that required them to put in a sit-lie ban down on University Avenue?
You got it. It's the same scenario playing over again. And in each instance, they have no records of any such thing happening. They're taking this step to prevent any possible accidents happening in the future.
I see, right.
There had been no no problems before, but the official line was there might be, people might trip over someone sitting on a sidewalk, though there had been no cases, in the same way there had been no accidents involved in this.
Well, I know there was a major outpouring of protest, very articulate protest at City Council a couple years ago, and this Sid Lai ban came into public discussion and was passed for the 10-block area along University Avenue. Has there been a similar response to this new...
Yes, there has been, and that's what the shopping cart thing is about. The new chief of police, Dwyer, I believe is his name, noticed that this wasn't playing too well in the local press of trying to prevent people from asking for help on the only places that they're legally able to do so anymore. If the private businesses kick them right off. So if they go out to a place that's illegal, they become a safety hazard that might sometime soon cause an accident. I was particularly amused to listen to Mickey Snyder, one of the anti-panhandlers on the city council, say, and I'm going to try to say it as close to what she said as I can. She said, this is not targeted at the homeless. After all, Girl Scouts might be tempted to sell cookies out there, and it's targeted at them just as much as at the homeless. And my friends and I were trying to think when we ever saw any Girl Scouts reduced to setting up out on that median strip. Oddly enough, the small merchants don't object to having Girl Scouts set up on their property, so they aren't driven out there.
Well, wasn't there a decision back in 1979 called the Pruneyard decision that essentially opened up shopping malls to public First Amendment activity, that if the shopping malls were generally open to the public, you couldn't, for example, bar anti-nuclear protesters or people engaging in First Amendment conduct? Wouldn't that somehow also still apply to poor people?
One would think so, but Howard Zinn in his writings has gone on at great length about the First Amendment. He says it means only what you're able to force it to mean at that particular moment, that you may have all the decisions on earth telling you that you're entitled to do that, but if when you actually get down to it, you have to spend the money to push another little suit through, it's of no real value to anybody. And that's what it seems to me, essentially, that no matter what some court decision may say somewhere, for ordinary homeless who don't have the money or the backing to sue or to make a big fuss about it, it's just non-existent. You ask if there hadn't been backlash for this. Yes, there was. It comes at a time when the city council has approved spending $600,000 to refurbish its council chambers. And has not up spending on the homeless at all. So the chief, being apparently a modern chief with some thought about public opinion, announced that Palo Alto is going to show its humanity by giving old battered shopping carts to the homeless, providing they have first been arrested and charged with petty theft for stealing the one they have.
Wow. And I bet they're lining up for that, huh?
Yes, they're. Some people are saying, well, it's kind of nice of them to give these six old battered carts, but the idea that they'll only do it after they've arrested somebody. They've only arrested one person for that. They nailed some poor guy for that and gave him a cart.
Maybe this is an attempt to drum up business for the police department. You know, I mean, more arrests and more shopping carts for the homeless. Kind of everybody wins. You know?
Yeah, I think it's probably a very bright move on the new chief's part. When you get down to it, over the 3 or 4 years that I've been following this fairly closely, things have gotten somewhat worse for the homeless in Palo Alto. They still haven't found a place for a drop-in center for them.
The old one was kind of washed away or something?
Yes, there was a flood last year during El Nino, and they still, there was a Blue Ribbon Citizens Committee, Stanford professors, the kind of liberals who really care in Palo Alto, and there are some here just like there are everywhere, came up with another recommendation to to do it, but the city council has done nothing.
Is the city council call itself liberal as well?
Well, probably only Fazzino, the head, would admit to being a flat-out conservative, he would call himself. Everybody else, I think, sees themselves as standard, college-educated, well-to-do, middle-class liberals.
Mm.
In the last election, there was there were no candidates who fit any other description. There was no possibility of mounting any kind of political campaign.
So go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was saying that the candidates who came forward at the last election were no different in any way from the people that were running it. We've never gotten more than 2 votes out of 7 on anything mm-hmm. in the years I've been fooling around with it. And
well, I know that you certainly had a lot of people who came out for that candlelight vigil supporting homeless people after they passed that silly sit-lie ban. Many, many people with candles, many middle-class people, kind of a different crowd than we had here in Santa Cruz who were opposing our sitting ban laws a couple years before when they passed here. But and then you told me that there was essentially not much enforcement going on. Is that still the case? Are people
True. Does that count as not much that the police looked the other way when the good middle-class citizens were sitting on the sidewalk violating the law, and they have not used it since?
So they haven't even used it against the homeless, huh? Or are they using it?
They haven't arrested or cited anybody. However, the number of homeless in the downtown area has steadily over the 4 years gone down and down and down.
And you have reports that this is because of harassment by police in an informal.
Oh, yes, of course. It's very quiet and subtle. The Palo Alto police are pretty much nice guys. There are always one or two kind of tough guys in the middle of things, but it's done very gently. Why don't you move along, buddy, and why don't you go somewhere else? And slowly, they're just smaller and smaller numbers. The numbers have been, you do it two ways. One, you give the very least possible amounts of services and suggest to people that Mountain View does a better job, which it does. You get them going that way. And you just keep hassling them about everything, and then after a while, the numbers slowly dwindle.
Now, what about Food Not Bombs? That's a group that's been in numerous cities, including San Francisco, Santa Cruz, and Palo Alto. I remember coming to one of your meals a couple years ago when you were doing a protest in the park across from, what was it, Star Restaurant?
Which became somebody else, yeah. Well, we did it for about 2 years, and then the numbers slowly went down until we were serving 8 or 10 people at a meal, and finally it just dwindled away and vanished. However, it has not vanished in other cities around here. I talk to the San Jose Food Not Bombs people quite frequently. They're doing it there.
I know they're trying to fight gentrification of St. James Park in San Jose.
Right, and I have recently been going over to the Berkeley-Oakland group that's serving meals in People's Park just to kind of keep my hand in from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was a city council meeting recently on the issue of this new ask for a dime. You have to ask for a dime, or can you just hold up a sign, and that still is to be considered criminal behavior under this new ordinance?
I missed that particular one, and I don't know the details on that one, Robert.
Uh-huh, because I remember reading briefly about it in the Chronicle, and then I saw this latest shopping carts for petty thieves, which sounds to me like the most kind of bald-faced kind of trade-off that won't even last a month, because, you know, the right-wingers can have a field day saying, oh, you're going to reward crime, eh? And it's not going to work because people are not going to, you know, well, maybe some people will go out. We should have a shoplifting brigade. We'll go out, do a little shoplifting, get a criminal record, and then have a, you know, I was arrested in Palo Alto for stealing a bar of soap campaign or something, so I could get my shopping cart.
The shopping cart thing is rather strange, because in recent years that's been kind of shined on by the police everywhere. I was once arrested at City Hall in San Francisco, and among the threats they made were to charge me with petty theft because I had pushed up a shopping cart filled with food to give away.
Mm-hmm.
But the cop was shamefaced when he said it to me, and he made no attempt really to charge me with that. And the Palo Alto police, I see, admit that they haven't enforced the shopping cart ordinance petty theft thing at all in Palo Alto. They don't anywhere. There's kind of an understood thing among people everywhere that it's the poor guys are down, or people, women, men, everybody, that are down to this pitiful little conveyance that they're keeping their things in, and it's got a Safeway name on it, and therefore they ought to go to jail. That has been more than what most people, most police
are. Yeah, wait a minute. These are homeless by choice, hard card, drug addict, drunky crazies who are obviously terrorizing and causing broken windows in our downtown areas.
It's ubiquitous, and it's getting worse, if anything. Things have not gotten any better in Palo Alto. They've gotten meaner and nastier, spirited, and no change. If anything, the people who were living in Palo Alto, many of whom grew up here, are driven out, are driven to San Francisco, for example, which was just rated in a national survey as one of the five meanest cities in the...
Right, we're going to be talking about that on the show later today, or already have.
So, it's same old among the good liberal places. Even Berkeley has had...
massive arrests for small possessions of marijuana were used to drive people off Telegraph Avenue, is what we've been told. You know, I understand also Palo Alto is a scene where large chain bookstores are driving out smaller people as well. Is that happening?
Yes, that's true. The Printers Inc., which has been a kind of a fixture on California Avenue, the secondary shopping center in Palo Alto, is being chased away by Borders and the similar big ones who are imitating them.
Well, maybe the police officer should give away copies of the California Penal Code to every homeless person who shoplifts from Borders, kind of do a special deal there.
Well, I don't think that's probably going to fit in with the new chief's public affairs attitude. He's got a...
Any protests coming up, Perusha, around this issue? Are people planning to do something publicly?
The protest this time, I was not at this big meeting when it was fought the last time. I recognize most of the names of the people who testified, but the one that does look a little different to me and is slightly hopeful is that the local American Civil Liberties Union people are coming out against it. The liberal kind of opposition has centered around the urban ministry, which does whatever direct help is given to the homeless, and they've been in a lot of disarray. They've changed leaders several times in the last 3 years. It's a kind of a dead-end place, and people get discouraged and tired after a while, you understand, when you see that nothing whatever is happening out of it.
You know, I know that the ACLU they don't do anything around here at all in terms of helping homeless people, but I know in Salinas and in Los Angeles, they were successful in overturning panhandling ordinances within the last 2 years. And in Salinas, it was remarkable because this was a man who had panhandled inside a Chinese restaurant. And the judge found that the Salinas panhandling ordinance was unconstitutional and further found that you cannot stop an individual from panhandling inside a restaurant on private property because it's protected free speech behavior, which to me was remarkable. I mean, none of us ever hoped. All we were looking for was the right to.
And that was Perusha Bluda talking with me about the Palo Alto situation and sort of surrounding cities. We're going to return to that tape, but we've received a phone call. We want to interrupt that tape for to talk to Tirith of Feed the People.
Hi, Tirith.
Hello, Robert.
And you're calling from a payphone from downtown Santa Cruz?
That's right.
And you have some rather disheartening news to report.
Yes, I finally got a camping ticket here in lovely Santa Cruz Friday morning. There's a whole community of people who camp in their vehicles on Mission Extension, which is at the very end of town going up Highway 1. And for months it's been a safe haven. Nobody's ever bothered us there. But Friday morning, the cops decided to go do a sweep and kick everybody out of there. And this was at 7:30 a.m., and I was questioning why he was kicking people out of there, because from our understanding, because of a little fight about a no parking sign, that Caltrans had said that that area has to be a legal federal camping zone for vehicles, because every state, every city is required federally to have at least one place for drivers to pull over and sleep. And Caltrans uses it for their people to sleep, too. But anyway, so I was explaining this to the cop, and he was saying, no, that's not a legal camping zone, and the camping ban has supposedly been constitutionally upheld in federal court, and therefore they can kick us out of there if they damn well please.
Now, which officer told you this?
This is Officer Dan Brierly, badge number 174.
Now, I know that, I don't know much about the Caltrans and the state law, but I know that the city, which was trying to put up no parking signs up and down that area, was dissuaded from doing so, although the
police... Caltrans was the one that put the kibosh on that.
Well, I think... I hadn't heard that from the public works person who was in charge of that. His name is Mark Adato.
Uh-huh.
He told me that they just had heard that everybody else said that there was no problem up there and there were no complaints. In fact, people were complaining about, I guess, the opposite, that they didn't want no parking signs put up late at night for different reasons. And that this was essentially a police department-initiated piece of activity, although I think there was also maybe one merchant was involved as well.
Yeah.
And this whole thing was, as I said, the kibosh was put on it in December, and we thought we'd actually sort of won a victory.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And
of course, then there was the city council's decision on December 8th that...
And this lovely officer says that he doesn't take his orders from city council, and city councils come and go, and that he will be there long after the city council is gone.
Uh-huh.
And I was saying, what is this Nazi bullshit? And he got really upset with me and finally decided he was going to give me the ticket. And I'm like, thank you, I'll see you in federal court.
Right, well, actually, we haven't had a federal court ruling in this district, though there was a federal court ruling in Miami.
Exactly, and that was my whole question to him was about, okay, he says that the camping ban has been federally upheld, and I'm like, excuse me? Who was the judge? When was it passed? And what are the details? And he claimed ignorance on that part. It's like, excuse me, you're an officer, you should know these things.
Well, he may have been talking about the local county state court under Judge Kangaroo Kelly, who upheld the constitutionality of the sleeping ban, sections of the camping ban. And of the camping ban. No, federal court, I don't know that the federal court has ruled on this issue locally that I've heard about.
It has not.
There may have been a ruling in a San Francisco court under Judge Jensen around the Matrix laws, but I don't know that it was specifically about the sleeping ban up there. I do know that, as I was saying to you, and as you know, the city council ruled, or, you know, passed a resolution on December 8th.
Yeah.
Rather weak resolution, looks like.
Very weak, and I will have some words on that you will find rather interesting.
Yeah, a little too weak, actually. They said, of course, that officers, I've actually got the resolution right here, I'll read it verbatim. The section that is relevant here is, they direct that whenever reasonable and practicable warnings rather than citations shall be issued by city enforcement personnel, also the enforcement of camping violations shall emphasize responses to citizens' complaints, which leads me to my next question.
He claimed up and down there was a citizen's complaint, and I kept asking him, what complaint, give me details, and he refused to give me a complaint. He said camping.
Did he warn you and tell you to move on before giving you the ticket? So he did give you a warning.
I was asking him questions because I want details. I am a person who...
It can be later. I mean, it's just that the other thing is that I've got to start to finish a book today. So I want to try to get in the library back a little bit.
Our phone call is being disrupted by somebody.
Well, tell him to hold on. You're on the radio.
Exactly.
He's
breaking into this line. They
don't... You're in the gym now, and then you're going to meet up with your friend like at what time? 2?
I'm sorry, what's going on there?
Somebody is disrupting this phone line. They don't want me to speak about what I was going to say.
Who is this? A person who's present?
Can you hear him?
I can hear somebody off, sort of in the distance. It could be simply KSCO bleeding into the radio line. You never can tell. KSCO bleeds everywhere.
Okay, I can come home after I work out.
Anyway,
I can come home after I work out.
Yeah, I think we're getting a bleed from another phone.
Somebody purposely
bugged.
Because the next thing I was going to say is very important.
Well, go ahead.
What I was going to say is the city council has been using people's, when people are personally talking about, I camp here and I do this and please help me and so on and so forth, they're using that information to track down where the homeless people are, and they are using that to give tickets to people and drive people out of their camping places in the forest. People have been driven out at gunpoint and had their camps burned.
Now, can you give me any specifics on that?
I did not speak to those people personally. Sunrise spoke with them, but they said that there were people they recognized as officers who were out of uniform going through the woods. And
how many instances are we talking about
15
here?
15 cases that Sunrise heard about. So I have not talked to these people personally, but I do know because where we are camping up at Mission Extension, like I said, has never been bothered, and we mentioned personally that we camp up there and that that was a safe zone, and all of a sudden now there are cops up there chasing people out. So we do know that.
We should also say that you experienced some problems from an officer over.
Oh, yeah, that was a lovely experience.
In a couple of days before Christmas when your van, you were told to move from...
A place where we had been given permission next to a church parking lot, and over said he would ticket us no matter where we were, whether we had permission or not, chased us off of that spot, told us to go park somewhere else. We went there. He showed up and said, you're illegally parked, and that we weren't allowed to be there because we had no permission to be there. And it's like, you sent us here after midnight when there's nobody here in the office to ask permission for anyway, so you set us up. And he has a four-page harassment report on him with
you complained with the Citizens Police Review Board.
Yeah.
Now, this was on December 23rd or so?
That is correct.
And I guess we're talking now between December 23rd and January, I guess it was 22nd or 23rd. I guess 22nd, which would be the last.
22nd was Friday.
Have you had any problems with the police, ticketing your van?
Well, that was the one ticket was on Friday. But before that, no, they haven't. No, they ticketed our white bus twice in 2 days, saying that we were storing it on a city street, and therefore that was illegal, and that we had to move it within 72 hours. We sold the bus. And the person got it.
And so you had the bus been parked there for 72 hours when
we moved that thing every 2 to 3 days.
And did you have a... So they gave you a citation or a warning for that bus?
Oh, no, it's a ticket. It is a real ticket.
I see. And you... To clarify for folks, you and Sunrise are workers with Feed the People. A
yes,
group
we are.
A group gives out free food to homeless
Monday.
People.
Tuesday and Thursday, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. out here on Pacific Garden Mall. We also...
In front of Logos Bookstore?
In front of Logos Bookstore. Mm-hmm. And if it's raining, we do it out of the bus, out of the parking lot next to the Episcopal Church. We also have a partner who picks up our food for us and drops it off for HCRC, St. Francis, YWCA, and Elm Street. So we service a lot of people with the food that we get and make a lot of people happy.
And so you also have a sort of an ear on the public, the poorer public who come to your food servings.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of reports have you heard in the last few weeks regarding this? Again, this thing I read about December 8th, which the city council passed, directing generally warnings. And
well, basically what I've been hearing is, like I said, more people have been harassed and excuse me, I'm sorry, I've got a bronchitis, but
it's okay.
More people than normal have been getting harassed and ticketed and chased out of their camps and had their camps burned. Places that, before this point, were normally safe. Nobody had ever touched them in years. But they are now being chased out of those camps because people are talking about them, saying, well, why don't you make this area legal because nobody's in the way here or whatever. And so now these people are getting chased out of those areas.
So are you saying that the task force discussions on these issues and the homeless...
That's bogus.
That homeless testimony before the task force is being used by the police department simply to harass the people who are testifying?
That is my belief.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any... Again, do you have particular people who and particular cases that you've documented here, or is this sort of just right now anecdotal?
Anecdotal, mostly. I haven't been... I've been sick, so I haven't been able to get a lot of contact with people.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, but you say your partner Sunrise has in fact heard of a number of tents being slashed.
He never writes anything down. I'm the person who writes everything down.
I see. Well, we have to get him a secretary, I guess.
I am the secretary.
Oh, you are the secretary.
I'm the business manager. I'm everything. But anyway,
I know that you didn't show up at the one meeting of homeless people that the task force had on Friday, a very short meeting, which I, to my dismay, was not a two-hour focus group like they're having with the business people, not a two-hour focus group like they're having with the homeless services people, not a two-hour focus group like they're having with the Chamber of Commerce, but a one-hour group, and it was held really it was even slightly less than an hour, and they didn't have the mayor there. She was apparently detained.
She was going to be there. Well, we had prior obligations we needed to deal with.
But you also, I believe, were skeptical of that meeting because you felt you had some criticism of it. You had some criticism of what are you critical of around the task force?
I think that it is a kangaroo court. I think that, and we sent one of our close associates who helped us, and he actually confronted the officers that were at that particular meeting. I heard there were three people there, like two cops and a sheriff, and they, of course, denied up and down that they had been using that information, and other people stood up. Were you there?
I was there, yes. You're talking at the meeting at the Homeless Services Center?
Yeah, I think this was what I was told, but since I was...
Yeah, there were two police officers, Sergeant Butchie Baker of 10 Complaints for Molesting Women fame, Vice Chief Locke, who...
I don't like women molesters or child molesters.
Right, well, that's what he was accused of, and there was a city council investigation in 1992 that was rapidly shut down under pressure from the DA's office, the police department,
okay.
The district attorney's office and the internal affairs gave him a clean bill of health, as well as a state attorney general, but again, those are, I would say, to some extent, in-house agencies, and you have to be careful. And the independent investigation that we sought of Sergeant Baker never, who was then Officer Baker,
of course not.
Never happened.
Of course not.
Yeah, and of course I tend to be, I'm skeptical that Baker was also known as a very strong harasser of homeless people several years before that, when he would pursue homeless people, give them multiple tickets. I was actually taken to jail by Officer Baker in 1990 because he claimed that he couldn't identify me, even though I had been arrested many times before. I was well known to him,
mm-hmm.
and he was a completely bogus charge for the purpose of taking me to jail.
Of course.
It was his practice to do that. He pursued one homeless man, gave him three tickets in one night. Again, these are instances that happened in 1990, and I haven't heard of, I have got to be candid, and I don't want to be unfair to now Sergeant Baker because he's, we have to be factual in our concerns
of
here.
Of course, he could have.
But having two police officers and not having any homeless people on this task force strikes me as a strange.
Oh, I would love to be on this task force.
Lack of balance.
I would gladly be on this task force because I want to be. It's like I believe in the way this country was originally set up, and I would like to get this country back to that. But unfortunately, I don't think anybody else does. That's in power.
Well, I think you or someone like you should definitely be on the task force, at least as a staff person you could volunteer to say you could volunteer for questions and so forth. But right now what they have on the task force is they have two police officers. They have Gene Arner, who's a very kind of a nice guy. I understand he's a Republican, but that's okay. I won't hold that against him.
Yeah.
Does all the taping, and he's kind of the liaison person. They have Siobhan, the city council staff person. And so they have the
council members,
the three city council members, when and if they show up. It has to be said that I believe Catherine Byers was at a funeral yesterday, or 2 days ago. That's why she said she didn't make it. And we are going to be playing, if you can get to a radio, the most of what happened at that meeting, which wasn't much, I'll tell you.
Okay,
but
that would be good.
What you can hear are homeless people speaking their minds, as you usually do when you listen to this radio show. By the way, for those who are listening, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We're talking to Tirith of Feed the People, who's just told us of a real live camping ticket. Now, there was a matter of some controversy, Tirith, that a ticket by... given to QZ, one of your workers.
He hasn't worked for us for several months, but yes, go ahead.
A former worker of yours, he got a ticket similarly up on Mission Street Extension. I believe he got it on December 9th or 10th, two days after this supposed ticket-only-on-warning showed up. What's that?
I only know rumors of it.
Yeah, I've seen the ticket, and I understand it's happening in court. He claimed that the officer who gave it to him, Officer Escalante, said he had given out four or five other tickets that same night, and we then tracked it down by asking the task force to look for consecutive numbers around that ticket, and Vice Chief Locke then became very indignant and said, we've checked this and we found... In fact, we may be playing you that segment shortly on the air. You'll be able to...
Great.
If you can get to a radio. He claimed that, it was all, a bogus matter. But again, it wasn't really very closely pursued. I mean, we don't know what the police practice is. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
But you said also your van has suffered some vandalism. I mean, your large bus.
Somebody's taken a disliking to us. And it was very strange. I think they were wanting to break into the bus to get something. I have no clue what, because we're homeless people. We don't have that much. The only thing we have of value to us is our guitars, and that's more our personal and our income than anything else.
Your tires were slashed?
One tire is slashed, and this is a $150 tire to replace because it's a school bus. Mm-hmm. These things are big. You have to have a special truck come out and lift it up and replace it, and it's going to cost us money that we don't have. Mm-hmm. And to top it off, it was strange because I went inside to get some phone numbers to start contacting people for help, and there's this really nasty smell inside, and it was identified as a drug substance, and it was most dominant.
I mean, inside the booth or inside the van?
Inside our bus next to an open window, mm-hmm. and what we figured out, because we have a dog,
mm-hmm.
whoever it was trying to blow this drug smoke into our vehicle to knock out the dog, then break in and
wow.
do whatever they could. Get in two of us, they slash the tire.
Well, are you going to be coming to the forum tomorrow night at the Loudoun Nelson Center?
I want to be there.
For those who don't know, is a forum on the sleeping ban, the camping ban, and the larger camping ban. It's being run by the task force. It's at Loudoun Nelson Center from 6:30 to 9:30, and we will be serving food at compliments of India Joe Schultz.
Yay.
Hot vegetarian soup at 6 o'clock, assuming old Joe doesn't crap out on us, which I don't think he will. He almost never does. So
maybe a little late, but he's good food.
He's generally there, yeah. He's pretty good. This is a lot of information here. Tara, how can people help feed the people?
Donations of money right now would be the best. With volunteers while I'm sick would be helpful, too, when we feed sandwiches out here on the mall, 5 o'clock p.m. in front of Logos. If it's sunny, if it's raining, out by the bus, because I don't want to be putting my germs in anybody's food and making more homeless people sick because it's bad enough.
How can they contact you?
We have a voicemail number that we check daily, try to, as long as we have change,
mm-hmm.
425-3333.
Mm-hmm. That's 425-FEED, for those who don't like numbers.
Oh, yeah. And we would gladly appreciate help. That's the two basic main things, because we need money to fix this tire, because...
Feed the people. Again, the number is 425-3333. We're talking to Tirith. Tirith, you also say that you are rather skeptical of the task force to end the...
Entirely skeptical.
...to deal with the camping ban. They don't want to end it. They just want to talk about it, sounds like.
They just want to talk about it to make people feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're just going to continue on in the track that they're going because there's too many people with big money.
Well, I suggest you immediately call the city council about this ticket. Plus, there is a hotline that has been set up for calling.
Oh, really?
Yes, the phone number for that hotline, it's actually been in effect for a month, and it's a line set up by Community Action Board worker Paul Brindell. It's the same line as many homeless people use for their voicemail. It's 457-9754.
457-9754,
and then you dial extension 411 as though you're dialing information, and that will put you through to a machine that will take a recording of your situation and just talk about your ticket. If you can, give the citation number, mm-hmm. where it happened, who gave it, and that your phone number and so forth. And again, anyone out there in the audience, if you've been harassed or ticketed by police around the sleeping ban issue or the broader camping ban issue, the number to call is 457-9754, extension 411. You can also call HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a group that is going to be, I believe, mounting protests in order to get some action here.
Question.
Yes, and let me give that number first. 423-HUF, 423-4833, if you wish to talk to some of us, want to volunteer, tell us what's been happening. I'm sorry, go ahead, Tirith.
Who answers this phone? I know it's a message machine, but who takes those messages, and what do they do with them?
Paul Brindell takes the messages. He's the fellow. He's actually a man who opposes the entire camping ban enforcement at this time because...
And he works with the city?
He works with a group called the Shelter Project. Doesn't quite work with the city. He doesn't work with the police, if that's what you mean. But, he's funded by the county. He may get some funding from the city. He's done some videos about homeless rights. His office is on Soquel Avenue.
Uh-huh.
you know, he's not a homeless person, but you know, it is a line that actually no one has been using at all. I don't think he's gotten one call.
I had never heard about it.
Yeah, I have put out a flyer about it, but my flyers tend to disappear as fast as they go out. And I probably should have that on my phone message line, the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and I will put that on the Huff line.
Yeah.
Is there more you want to tell us you think that would be helpful for people to know? I know I'd love to have people come to this, not only to this forum tomorrow night.
Please, yes, we need as many people there as we can get.
But I also encourage people to come on Tuesday night to City Council. There are two City Council meetings tomorrow, I mean Tuesday. They are at 3:30 and at 7. The reason you should come there is to really talk to the whole City Council and tell them to get off their duff, and also to tell them, you know, what's really been going on. You can bring this issue to the broader public by going to the City Council meeting. I think we hope that this Loudon Nelson is going to be televised, but it's not yet clear that whether the Monday task force meeting from 6:30 to 9:30 is going to be televised. But we do know that City Council, the 3:30 and 7 o'clock sessions on Tuesday at City Hall, will be televised.
Oh, good. But the only thing I would like to say is, if people are going to talk about their specific homeless situations, don't say places, because if it's a place where you camp regularly, it will get raided.
Do you have any more specifics about places that have been raided that you want to talk about?
I don't know specifics. There was somebody, one of my friends knows him really well, and I'm like spacing names left and right now. Mm-hmm. But
well, what happened?
There's a couple of people were sleeping, camping wherever they camp, and a whole pickup load of like 7 people with baseball bats beat the shit out of this guy.
You know, I heard that, and I heard that from another person. I understand he was going to be he was either in a wheelchair or crippled or something when I came to the center, but I was so focused on the task force meeting on Friday that I didn't look for this guy. If you get any more information on him, please let me know.
I can talk to my friend who knows what's going on with that and get some information on that, but that's disgusting.
Sounds like a resurgence of troll busting, as we call it.
Oh, yeah, it's like, and the whole attitude I'm finding of people who are not homeless is like total violence toward anybody who's homeless. We had a group of teenagers. I mean, these guys were like in high school, and they came, and where we were parked, they pulled up to go pee on this field that was next to our bus, and we don't like anybody outside our vehicle at night. It's like, we want to know what's going on. So we got out, and I said, is there something wrong? Can I help you? You came up to my bus. I want to know what's going on. Like, go away, leave me alone. No, 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 no. I didn't come up to your bus. And they were like really violently abusive with their language, and I was like, excuse me, talk to me like a human being. I'm not some drug addict, user, hippie, whatever this is. Talk to me like I'm a human being, and please, let's discuss what's going on. Why were you by my bus? And I finally got it out of them that they were high, that they just wanted to go bathroom in public, which is illegal. And I'm like, excuse me, I have a self-contained unit, and I try to be clean and hygienic about these things. And here,
no doubt you'll be blamed for that one later.
Yeah, exactly. And
well, they were probably just kids who wanted to go take a piss. And they
were spouting off about how illegal it was for me to be homeless. And I'm like, excuse me? You're only in high school, and you don't even know the laws. And I was trying to say the stuff about the Constitution of the United States, and they were trying to swear that the state of California was above the Constitution. And
never argue with a drunk. That's my motto. I hear you. You know, I think that it sounds like you got some kids who get into this confrontational attitudes. But I think basically the problem is there aren't restroom facilities, so kids have to go find a field to piss in, and there you are. You know,
that's not the point. It's that they're not even being taught, and they're taught sure. This abusive behavior towards people because the schools aren't even teaching people anything anymore. In fact, I never knew anything about the Constitution until I started reading about it myself, because in school they just kind of gloss over it.
Right.
And I think what we're looking here at is the City Council won't be able to do anything because we have to change society.
Well, I'm going to ask people to sign on to a proposal tomorrow that suggests the City Council that it's immediately time to lift the sleeping ban in non-residential, non-business, non-beachfront areas of the city, one, and two, to set up a campground, whether it's, you know, taking over Bob's campground or some other campground that people can use who don't have vehicles, who need to be able to sleep.
It would be a wonderful, wonderful thing, but
I mean, I think what we need to do is have our own program. About what we want them to do, and then we come to them and say, don't just spend your time talking about the camping ban.
Or can we?
You know, but talk about something specific that is really doable.
Can we, as people, scrounge together from our own ways of getting money, and like people at SSI or whatever, can we, as a group, donate money to a fund to buy a piece of land where we can make our own campground, so it's private ground and they can't say anything because it's our private land?
Sure, but that's a ways down the road. What I'm thinking of is right now, in an emergency shelter crisis that we have in Santa Cruz, there have got to be legal places to go. And because of that, we need them to talk about particular proposals and not to spend their time raising the fears of people in neighborhoods that you're going to be camping your bus, you know, right next to the downtown residence areas, which I don't think you have any interest
in
doing.
Go around the city. And
in other words, what I'm saying is, the right now the opposition to changing that law is being mobilized because they're afraid the city council is talking about lifting the entire camping ban citywide.
Yeah.
Instead of lifting the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban in certain specific non-residential areas, which is what I think they should be talking about, and that, I think, would produce more of a consensus in our community.
They're paranoid in general because they think that homeless people are these evil cretins. They don't understand.
Who is they? Who are you talking about?
Most of these citizens that are opposed to lifting the sleeping ban think that...
Well, I think they're afraid it's in their neighborhood. You know, they're worried about their neighborhood. And what I'm saying is they don't have to worry about their neighborhood because we're not even talking about their neighborhoods. We're talking about other areas, you know.
Even out in the industrial end of town where we park, we've got all these people coming by and, like, shouting things. We had two girls that I know of, Danielle and... I forgot her name. They had somebody came by their vans and spray painted up their license plates because they wanted to get these girls in trouble because, of course, you cover up your license plate and that's, like, illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people that are doing just all this sort of little petty vandalism against homeless people because they want to drive us away and they don't understand. It's like, excuse me, we're just people that are down on our luck and we're just trying to find a way to survive and exist while we're scraping together our meager resources to get back on our feet.
Sure. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you a moment to finish up, but I'm going to try to turn to this to give us some indication of what the task force has been doing. We're going to hear the police and the task force very shortly as our next segment. So would you like to kind of conclude and tell us what your thoughts are, and then we'll go into that segment?
Work towards a solution, but don't set your hopes too high because I don't believe we have to force them with a lawsuit.
Right. Okay. Well, we're talking to. I agree with you. I think that we'd like to get the ACLU involved, as it is in Palo Alto and has been in Salinas and Los Angeles. But here they seem to
be,
as we put, yes, in Miami,
and
asleep
Miami.
At the wheel. We've been talking to Tirith of Feed the People, and you can reach her at 425-3333. Her van has been ticketed by the police, and what may be the second verified ticket that the police have issued since December 8th, although apparently harassment and move-along has been as usual.
Yeah, there's been a couple of those.
And if you want to help out with funding or volunteering...
Please don't be fixing my tire. It's $150.
425-3333. Thanks a lot, Tirith.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
کاشکی دلی پریشون نمیشد، چشم زخوس گریون نمیشد، ابرای آسمون کیبا میشن، خسته ستاره ها پیدا میشن. کاشکی نرنگی نبود، جنگی نبود، کاشکی در سینه دل تنگی نبود، کاشکی در زده برست جدا نبود، کاشکی این قطعه زموره بی وفا نبود، کاشکی دلی پریشون نمیشد، چشمی زخوس گریون نمیشد، افرای آسمون پیدا میشن، پس که ستاره ها پیدا میشن. چی میشد دردی نبود، عشقی نبود، آهی نبود، چی میشد رنجی نبود، کینه به خود خواهی نبود، کاش که دل ز دل برست جدا نبود، کاش Kashkei, Dehadei Zamune Biliva Panabur, Kashkei, Kashkei, Teri Parishun Nemishot, Shashme Zakoseger Yun Nemishot, Afroye Rasse Munkei Damishan, Paske Sakare Hapei Damishan. شود دردی نبود آشکی نبود آهی نبود چی میشد رنجی نبود کینه و خود خواهی نبود کاشکی دل ز دل بر از جدا نبود کاشکی دلت ای زمونی بی وفا نبود کاشکی کاشکی دلی پریشون نمیشد ششمی ز غصه گریون نمیشد ابرای آسمون پیدا میشن.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. I believe that is a Jewish folk song we just listened to. Was going to play you something else, but that's Kristen Lims. And what we're about to listen to now, as I promised, is the task force meeting of the City Council's committee to revisit the camping ban. They're not going to go so far as to say that they want to end the sleeping ban, heavens no, or even modify the sleeping ban, but they are going to revisit. They're kind of just looking in, so to speak. I just got a phone call from Phil Free. Phil reminded me that on Tuesday, not merely is the City Council having its usual chatter session from 3:30, although it says here on the wall 3, usually they're from 3:30, could be from 3, I'm not sure. If anybody knows, give me a call here at 427-3772. But certainly as the last item on that afternoon agenda, there will be a resolution to support Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is the radio station you are listening to at 96.3. And anybody wants to support that supporting resolution should be on hand, though it may well be that that is not a controversial resolution. I'm not sure if it's controversial here or not. I know in Berkeley it got 7-0. It was passed completely. But Berkeley may be more liberal around radio than we are here in Santa Cruz, or than they are, I should say, on the City Council here in Santa Cruz. So again, Tuesday, January 26th, come to City Council between probably around 5 or 5:30 is when the agenda item is going to show up, but come earlier if you want to be sure. And also, there's a thing called the consent agenda on the Santa Cruz City Council, and that is a situation where you can pull items off the consent agenda and talk about them. And they give you more time, usually, than you get at oral communications in the evening between 7 and 7:30, which is also a time to talk about whatever you want, whatever's on your mind. And, of course, you have to be relevant to the agenda item, but you can also kind of, you know, you can reach a little bit and bring in other things, provided you do address yourself to the agenda item. So that's one way of talking not just to the City Council, not just the people who are visiting the City Council, which, by the way, is at 809 Center Street, for you who don't know, right across from the main library, not hard to come to. But it's also a way of talking to the television audience. Out there, every City Council meeting, every 2 weeks, there is a televised City Council for those who have cable TV, and a number of people do, a number of people who don't come down, but who do watch it, and so you can get your message out to folks in the living rooms of the Santa Cruz, the City of Santa Cruz. Now, I also putting out an appeal, because tomorrow night, as you may know, from 6:30 to 9:30, there is a full-fledged public forum on the camping ban ordinance. That is being run by the task force. Crone, Sugar, and Byers are the task force, and will be held at Loudoun Nelson Center in the auditorium. And it's between 6:30 and 9:30. Come at 6 if you want hot soup. We're going to be doing that out front. But we're looking for a cellular phone. We want to borrow a cellular phone from someone who's willing to do that, because that way the whole thing can be broadcast live through Free Radio Santa Cruz. So if anyone out there has a cellular phone who wants to lend it to us for the purposes of this broadcast from 6:30 to 9:30 on Monday, January 25th, that's tomorrow, please give us a call And if you don't want to call us on air, you can call the voicemail at 427-4523. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail, 427-4523. We need a cellular phone to broadcast the entire situation tomorrow at Loudoun Nelson. We don't know if they're going to televise it. They may not. They don't usually have those kinds of facilities. So if you want the broader public to hear about this and you have access to a cellular phone, this really would be a good opportunity to play Good Samaritan here. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And as I promised you, I'm going to now turn to the task force of the Santa Cruz City Council. And this is a sort of self-contained segment. You're welcome to call in if you got something you want to say. We may have to kind of wait a bit, but if you're really getting pissed off, we'll stop the tape and let you speak, because you are the public. And really, I want to hear you more than a tape I've already heard. So 427-3772 is the number to call here. You're talking to the public, but you're talking to me. I'm Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, concerned with homeless civil rights. And we now turn to the session of the task force of the committee to repeal, not to repeal the sleeping ban, I wish it were, to examine the camping ordinance that was held on Thursday afternoon.
And now some selected cuts from the January 21st City Council Task Force on the Camping Ban meeting with police and the judiciary.
This is almost our last focus group. We've been meeting with the downtown
Some of the tape is not the best quality, but that is the voice of Catherine Byers. Introducing the tape and giving you much commentary is going to be a video journalist and Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban worker, Becky Johnson. I will also be interrupting the tape periodically to keep you abreast of what's happening. In the room were Sheriff Mark Tracy, Vice Chief of Police, or Assistant Chief of Police, Jeff Locke, Sergeant Butchie Baker, Catherine Byers, Keith Sugar, Christopher Crone, all council members, Rudy Quintanar, and Jim Lang of the Parks and Rec Department, which gives out a lot of tickets in the Poganip and other areas around town, and John Barasoni, the city attorney, as well as a number of homeless activists and homeless people who came to the meeting hoping to be able to speak, and also to be able to speak at the meeting that was supposed to follow that meeting. The way the task force is doing this, they hold what they call focus sessions, that is to say, sessions concerned with a particular group. They've held them with homeless service providers, they've held them with certain neighborhood associations like Harvey West, they've held them with the homeless advocates themselves, and then they had this very short so-called focus session with the homeless people that were hoping to have time to play toward the end of the show. That was on Friday. They also have regular meetings that are supposed to be every Monday and Thursday at 4 o'clock, sometimes in the ABC room of the Civic Auditorium, sometimes on the second floor of the library. They've been canceling these meetings, and it looks like they were just holding these meetings long enough to set up the focus meetings. And the reason that's significant is because at the focus meetings, they don't let anybody talk except the focus group. So those who come to observe, those who hear the police saying things they disagree with, regard as lies or false information, they can't respond to that at that point. And what they can do, however, is respond to it during the oral communications period of the task force's regular meetings, which unfortunately are all being canceled one after the other by Mayor Byers, who runs the task force. So there are a lot of people in the room listening, and I will try to give you a sense of what was going on. I think Becky's doing a pretty good job of it, too. You'll hear her voice describing this. I was there, and I don't believe... Yes, she was there as well. So both of us were there at the meeting, as well as other activists like Sherry Connable, like Linda LeMaster, folks concerned with, well, repealing the sleeping ban and loosening the camping ban as well, to give people a chance not merely to sleep, but to have some place legally to shield themselves from the elements. Let's hear some more of this tape again. This is January 21st. The City Council Task Force meets with the police and the sheriffs, the Parks and Rec, and the city attorney.
This is a residence
food network's neighborhood groups. There is one tonight in the Clinton Street area. There's a neighborhood group, but none of it's been attended. A staff person has offered to attend on our behalf and record there. So we really are frightened. We've met with homeless and homeless activists. So
actually, Catherine Byers is not correct in that. The task force had not met with any homeless people at that point in time, and when they did meet with homeless people 2 days later, Catherine Byers was absent from that meeting entirely.
You know, I probably most of you know, but the one thing I wanted to really learn about, understand, and figure out was the cost that, you know, those who can least afford it take on when they get a citation, you know, and how it escalates in warrants and they spiral downhill because they've got warrants. And so we're trying to get, and thank you, can get much information on that and see if there a way that we can make that a little bit easier. So
Catherine Byers here is asking about the cost of a sleeping ban ticket, a ticket of under Municipal Code Section 6.36.010. As anyone who's ever gotten such a ticket knows, it's $162, although that cost can be lowered by the judge. And there's a little bit of discussion about that. What's amazing is that this is literally... Well, Catherine Byers has been on the City Council for 10 years now. She was appointed in 1989 and was reelected twice. She knows this issue. Presumably, she's heard from hundreds of people who've gotten sleeping and camping tickets. And yet, after all this time, she does not know the cost of such a ticket. That is really a telling fact, which indicates that she either has a hard time with figures or else hasn't paid too much attention to this issue. It's also pertinent to comment on this because when this issue was brought up on December 8th, and only brought up because a lot of us pressure her to put something on the agenda, her comment was that what she really wanted to do around the sleeping ban or the larger camping ban was to find a way to cut down on the cost of tickets to homeless people and cut down on the cost of community service. That is, the basic right to sleep, which she did vote for on December 8th, although she moved to strike the right to cover up with blankets, was not really the main focus. And the problem here has been, in all these task force meetings, there is no and has been no clear focus. There is a focus for those of us who elected the City Council majority, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, who give Byers her majority. We told them we wanted the sleeping ban repealed, period. Very simple. Not the entire camping ban, but the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban that make it illegal simply to fall asleep or cover up with a blanket. We also told them we wanted regulated campgrounds and some areas for people to legally sleep. And that was what we expected them to do in time for winter. But they chose to do nothing whatsoever about that because Mayor Byers, was leading the show here. They use the argument that she has been using for years that she doesn't have the votes to make changes. Well, of course, now she has the votes, but she's choosing not to make the changes. Again, going back into this meeting of the task force we're listening to on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, which is what you're tuned to, we're listening to the task force to look over the camping ban, a meeting with the police, the sheriffs, and the parks and rec officials. And Catherine Byers has just asked the question, what about the fines? How much does it cost for a camping ban ticket or a sleeping ban ticket?
I did get the information today. I apologize, I did not write it down there for you, but the basic bail, they call it, is $60. That's equivalent to the fine. Everything else, in the $162 is an accurate figure. The remainder of that, the $102 or something like that, is what is called a penalty, which is split between the state and the county to build jails, provide service for the immigrants, things like that. So the basic fine is exactly that. The fine itself is lower, but the
cost,
automatic penalty cost on top of that builds it up to where it is.
Can you elaborate on that? The fine, the basic fine for a camping ordinance violation hasn't been changed in years and years. It's $60.
And we're listening to City Attorney John Barisoni. The voice before that was that of the city's staff member, Gene Arner.
you know, for an infraction. But the state law says for every $10 of the fine, you add a $10 penalty, which goes to the state. So, or if it was $61, you'd add $70, because it's every $10 or percentage thereof. So by virtue of the fact that we have a $60 fine, that automatically kicks in a penal code requirement to add $60 to go to the state. And then, in the government code, the county has the right to add a penalty of $7 per $10 of the fine. So by virtue of the fact that we have a $60 penalty, that enables the county to tag $42 and collect $42 on that. So you have a $60 fine. The state and the county, by virtue of that $60 fine, get $102 in penalty. If you reduced, okay, if you reduced the fine below $60, that would proportionately reduce the other thing, because it would reduce the penalties that are generated. So that's how that works.
I'll just start off, kind of, you know, as we've been going from meeting to meeting and speaking with people, and in some of my limited contact, you know, discussions about this with
this is Council Member Sugar speaking.
Something has been hinted at, but no one has really just come out and said it, and that is the fact that the sleeping ban provides some utility for law enforcement in that it acts as a catch-all to, prevent the disruptive behaviors that sometimes accompany homelessness that are offensive. Everything from, urinating in public to breaking and entering. So the first question is, can you speak to that, both enforcement agencies?
I want to make a comment on what Councilmember Sugar is saying. While it's interesting that he says these are behaviors associated with homelessness, no, it might be fair to say they're associated with some forms of, well, urination and defecation is associated with camping, because you have to do that if you're in a place for any length of time, and there obviously have to be public facilities to deal with that. To say that these behaviors are associated with homelessness is... It really is a misnomer in a certain way, because most of the problems that come from urination and defecation and littering in this town are not related to homelessness. They are related to people like we heard, young people partying, people coming to the boardwalk, tourists. The vast number of people who engage in these kinds of behaviors do so either because they're oblivious, because there aren't public facilities, but they're not homeless. And again, homeless people are being scapegoated here. And they're being scapegoated by a city council member who should know better. Now, he's actually trying to address a legitimate issue, the issue of, well, it's not the sleeping that people object to, it's other stuff that is their concern. Crapping, shitting, disturbing the peace. For some people, simply being in a neighborhood makes them nervous. They're afraid their house is being cased for theft and so forth. Of course, the immediate response that many of us would have is, well, then punish those other behaviors, don't punish sleeping. And then, of course, the response of the police or of the critic who supports the sleeping ban is, yes, but you can't catch people doing those things. You'll find the pile of crap, you'll find the urine, you'll see the house already broken into, or you'll see the area messed up. And I don't like this house broken into stuff. I see no stats correlate between homeless people and that at all, and that's completely based on paranoia, and it's a form of prejudice. But, you know, one can say, okay, yeah, people have to take a crap, so if you're sleeping, you got to take a crap somewhere. You know, how can you catch that if people will come and do it and then leave? Well, obviously what you want to do is, if you're really concerned about that issue, is you set up public facilities that people can use, and it's much more likely they'll use it than that they won't. And so then the point is to focus on that issue. Anyway, Councilmember Sugar continues asking, his question to the police is, do you use the camping ordinance as a tool to deal with other bad behavior? I guess the question could have been better phrased, why don't you just deal with other bad behavior directly? But let's hear how it's answered.
I guess that's really my first question. Is it true that there is that utility? Do you view that there is some utility, there is a sort of a prophylactic utility in the ordinance that allows you to prevent disruptive behavior before it occurs if there is nothing else really to use as a hook?
Well, there's two ways to answer that.
Again, I have to interrupt. Prevent disruptive behavior before it occurs. Parking in a vehicle and sleeping is not disruptive behavior, and the assumption that such people are more likely to engage in disruptive behavior is simply sheer prejudice. And it's not that that view isn't held by people, but I'm hoping that the city council members will proactively, to use a au courant term, will proactively say, we hope you're not saying that homeless people are more inclined to engage in abusive behaviors, because if you are, then you can prove it to us first. We'd like to see that. We think it's a myth, unless they have some evidence themselves. But, of course, they're not doing that. They're using this so-called objective approach where they're asking the police for their opinions, and, of course, they're going to get them, and here they come.
Sheriff's office, it's most of our calls for camping or sleeping or whatever are initiated by neighbors or complaints, not by self-initiated activity. Unless there's been an ongoing neighborhood or area complaint about it, then we go through directed patrol in that area. So for us, it's not a
Vice Chief Locke
an issue that there's a lot of self-initiated activity on the part of deputies around. It's usually people called. Are there times where deputies may take self-initiated activity around those issues in certain areas? Yes, that is correct. If they have had an experience over time with what you're saying, Keith, around. If we had a certain area and we knew that there was neighbor complaints and we were able to work with the neighbors and have people no longer be there, but we knew over the time that might happen again, we might go back knowing that it created those problems with the neighbors or trash or lack of restroom facilities. But for us, it's not something statistically that we're throughout the county dealing with. Only in certain areas, pockets in the county have issues about homelessness or sleeping.
It's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Almost exactly the same in the city. There is.
So the first voice speaking was that of Mark Tracy, and it's kind of interesting because for those who don't know, Mark Tracy is the sheriff, and in the county, there is no countywide camping ban. There is a camping ban in four small areas near the city, Carbonera Creek, Paso Tiempo, Tanner Heights, another small area there too, and called Additional Carbonera Creek. And there's also one at the Live Oak Beaches. But there is no camping ban in the county. This we verified we have the law, actually, and it's been known, we've known that for a decade. But in fact, what happens is that the county misinforms folks about the camping ban. And indeed, that very day, we called the county twice and asked them, can I park my vehicle in the San Lorenzo Valley? And they said, no, there's no legal place to park your vehicle except in a campground. And we got this kind of misinformation twice. So I wrote up a flyer, and I distributed it at this meeting. You should understand the context, listeners, because every one of these people had the flyer in front of them, which said the county is lying to campers about camping. And here we have the man who heads the county enforcement, Sheriff Mark Tracy, being asked about camping and the use of the camping law to prohibit bad behavior. And he nowhere says that, the camping law doesn't affect us much because it only affects 5% of the county, which would be an honest answer to Councilmember Sugar's question. Instead, he acts as though there is a county camping ban, countywide camping ban. And indeed, throughout this entire session, Catherine Byers, Keith Sugar, and Christopher Crone nowhere asked the one simple question, is there a countywide camping ban? And are people being misinformed about it by the deputies, as this flyer says? This would be a very relevant question, because even though it concerns the county, if people are being lied to about in the county about whether they can sleep there, it's going to affect whether they go into the city to sleep or not. Because if you can't sleep in the county and you can't sleep in the city, and you think that that's the case in both places, then it's not going to matter where you sleep, and you're just as likely to end up in the city as in the county. Whereas if you know that it is legal to sleep in most areas of the county, then you may, if you have the ability, go to the county, and it would impact people looking over the situation around the city's camping ban or the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban. So it's very strange that these council members didn't ask that question of Sheriff Mark Tracy, particularly when a flyer was sitting right in front of their nose with information that the county was giving out, the Sheriff's Department was giving out misinformation on this subject. I have an incoming call here.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Uncle Robert, I just got in the door.
Ah, we're talking to Dead On David Silva, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I haven't got too much to say or too much time. We're trying to get organized for that.
Actually, we're in the middle of talking about the task force on the sheriffs, but I guess we can
That's a write-off, isn't it?
Indeed.
So why don't we just leave it as a write-off? I don't want to talk about it.
Well, actually, no. I don't want. You're welcome to talk about it, but I think that what you called in to talk about was something else, and since you probably don't have time to call back in the next hour.
Yeah, I'm really, really hustling. Let's interrupt this.
Let's interrupt this whole.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Let's interrupt this process and ask you, because indeed you're a man who follows these things. And I guess you have a city council agenda.
Yeah, I do.
Such as it is in front of you for the Tuesday. Is it 3 o'clock or 3:30 meeting? Do you know?
It is a 3 o'clock meeting.
It is a 3 o'clock meeting, yeah. So it's a little early. Now they're beginning to hold their meetings earlier.
Yeah.
3 o'clock meeting and I guess a 7 o'clock meeting. What's on the agenda on the afternoon? And I apologize for listeners for breaking up we've been listening to this rather exciting police tape thing, the discussion of the task force of the police. But what's happening on Tuesday that we should know about in the afternoon, David?
Well, we might celebrate a couple things on the consent agenda. You know, the street closure for the very, very successful industrial hemp exposition. That's a good positive way to counteract the evil effects of the war on drugs and the criminalization of marijuana and hemp, and actually show some of the positive stuff. And the city's got that right on its consent agenda, which means it's just going to give it a pass and do the street closure. The Hemp Expo last year, as you know, was very, very successful, and it's going to be even more successful this year. So that's
I remember last year was in the Civic Auditorium, right?
Yes, and they're going to close the street in front of the Civic Auditorium.
Great.
Church Street. 21st and 22nd of March.
Wow.
Should be quite a to-do. I know Bob LaMonica has worked very hard on it. Lots of people worked real hard on it. We'd like them to show up all tomorrow and take a break and come speak at the community forum tomorrow night.
That's on the sleeping ban.
On the camping ordinance, and let's take a firm stand on repealing the sleeping ban tomorrow night, folks.
Right.
City Council also is going to automatically open a position on the water board because of somebody that's just not been participating and not communicating. And then at the very end of the business agenda in the afternoon, the very last item on the business agenda in the afternoon is the resolution support of Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Right, I was mentioning that.
You were mentioning that. Okay, good. Yeah, I think it'd be a good time for people to actually be present praise the city council for considering this. Mm-hmm. A little bit of praise goes a long way.
How about the redevelopment agency? They often have a meeting at 5 o'clock. Anything happening there?
Well, I wish I could tell you that there was. I know there is a lot of stuff around the river and flood control and river development and so forth like that. And I haven't read the supporting documents, so there is a lot. But I think it's the stuff they put off from last time. As you know, the last meeting they had was just way overloaded.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's mostly stuff they put off. So I think it's going to be just pretty much getting things going. And then, of course, in the evening, the big item is going to be Terrace Point. Terrace Point has not gone away. Wells Fargo has not gone away.
Can you clarify what that is for folks who don't know?
Well, there's been several permutations of the Wells Fargo trying to take the land out there, Terrace Point, and do something commercial in development with it. And no matter what they do, no matter how much they call it research, they still seem to want to have a touristy, residential, heavy impact on that very, very fragile land. No matter what they do, it does not comply with the water requirements. It even requires that there be an additional police station built in order to meet the impact out there. And does not relieve student housing. As a matter of fact, it's going to create even more people coming and impacting on our rent situation here. The people that will be getting the housing there will probably be people of high stature within the research, marine research. So there's lots of things, and it goes through different permutations. So I may not be talking about the current permutation, but Wells Fargo is making big scary noises about suing the city to death. And I think we need to come out as a community and say, you know, Wells Fargo could just get over it. They knew what that land was when they bought it.
What's the issue here? I'm not sure I understand. Wells Fargo suing the city about what?
Well, threatening to sue the city if they don't let if we don't let them develop it so they can, you know, invest. Santa Cruz Community Credit Union, as far as I'm concerned, then we'll be able to have some kind of people's decision on it. They've been obstinate, they've been non-cooperative, and they've even been thuggish when it comes to the media. And I think the city council needs to stand up, and they need support. We've been fighting this Terrace Point issue for a long, long time, and the city council needs support. A few of the new members are perhaps a little nervous by seeing such large lawsuits waved at them, and this kind of bank terrorism we need to stand up against.
Is this one of these sort of keystone issues or touchstone issues where you have Hernandez, Rotkin, and Matthews on one side and Byers, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar on the other, you think?
Yeah, but you're going to find that Wells Fargo is more and more moving into trying to divide, you know, with fear. And so I think that the community support of saying, we're behind you, you know, don't worry about Wells Fargo, is really important. Especially since, you know, we do have some new and young less experienced council members who aren't used to facing millions of dollars of lawsuits, and I think the community showing up and giving them support would be very good at this time.
David, you've been going to the task force to examine the camping ordinance meetings, many of them. Any comments on that process?
Well, it's a preliminary, you know, kind of pre-ordinal change version of public hearing. It's actually, in a way, it's kind of the city council is doing some of the work for us in terms of building community.
Don't turn that dial. It's 96.3 FM. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear, Robert Norris. This is Bathrob Spear's Broadsides, 2.5 hours from 11 to 1:30 on Sunday afternoon, the January 24th, 1999 show. We're going to be following particularly closely the task force on the camping ban with lots of analysis, numerous replays of some of their task force meetings, and a look ahead to Monday when tomorrow there will be a full-scale forum from 6:30 to 9:30 at Loudoun Nelson Center for those who are concerned about restoring human rights to the homeless and those who oppose that. Stay tuned. We also have interviews with Kate Wells, Marusha Abluda from Palo Alto, and more.